Welcome to the Kosafa Show with Mark Gleason and Nick Said.
Welcome to our eighth edition of the Kosafa Show as we enjoy the timely return of international football on the African continent this week after almost a year without matches for our Southern African nations.
We have an interview with current SuperSport United defender Bongani Kamalo, who may be an ex-Bafana Bafana international, but also has strong ties to another Kosafa nation. He reveals his club's preparations for the new season and reflects on his time in the national team.
Also in the show, we have an interview with Mozambique coach Luis Gonçalves. They are currently in Portugal preparing for international friendly matches against Guinea-Bissau and Angola. We'll talk you as well through the other fixtures involving Kosafa countries in the coming days. We are delighted to be joined by the experienced SuperSport United defender Bongani Kamalo, who famously scored against France in the 2010 World Cup and is one of the few Bafana internationals to be born outside of South Africa, still very much a Southern African, and of course, captained his country as well.
SuperSport are camping in Polokwane ahead of the 2020-21 Premier Soccer League season, where they will also start the defence of their MTN8 title against TTM next weekend. Bongani, thanks so much for joining us. How are those preparations going?
Hi, very, very good. I mean, I think so far, the guys have done well in terms of just staying fit. We did have a little bit of a break, but even within that little break, we still had to submit sort of like runs and so on and so forth. We're in Polokwane now, and it's the first time here where we've come here, and it's actually rainy and quite cold. So that's been interesting. But all in all, I think the team is good and most of the players are fit, good to go.
10 years now, Bongani, since the World Cup in South Africa, a great occasion for everyone concerned. What are your memories of that tournament and do you feel that South African football has kicked on as much as it should have since then?
It's been a long time ago now, but certainly it was a special time for the country and every player that was involved. I don't think any player that's been part of that generation or that would have played has experienced anything since. So that is very, very special. In terms of, I think post the World Cup, I think we all expected a lot more, just in terms of the progression of our game and fans coming to the stadiums. But I don't think that there's been enough growth considering how big and massive the World Cup was for us, which is slightly disappointing. But I believe there are some positives. We have amazing arenas that we get to play in now with our local league. And I think, for the national team, whether it be football, rugby and so on, there's just incredible arenas where fans can come together and truly appreciate special games together.
You spent 5 years in England and Greece after that tournament. What was that experience like? And do you think South Africa exports enough players from the PSL these days?
Oh, it was interesting. I think, when I went over, the first year was very, very hard. It was very hard. The first year would have struggled just settling in and injuries and all sorts. And I took the next year, I went away to Greece, which was an interesting experience in that as well. It was a very different style of play. But, I think towards the end, I started enjoying it and felt like I did well. It was a good season for the club as well that year. And then I went back to England. I was alone at Doncaster. I think it was all about, gaining experience. I was obviously a youngish player at the time and I'd had a great experience in the World Cup and, they bet on potential. And I was willing to work hard. I didn't mind taking, a couple of steps back to get me forward. And that was the move that move to Doncaster came about and I felt I was doing well I think a lot of people would know. It's not necessarily a club that would challenge for promotion as such, but they'd just been promoted from League One and had good players. And when you start a season fresh, you obviously want to compete and finish as high as possible. So that was a challenging club to play for, and it provided great tests. And when I felt as if I'm really, really getting used to football in England and the style and just the pure intensity of it all, I found myself here in Randburg, laying on a bed wondering whether I'll ever play football again. Certainly that injury, suffered against Brazil was at the time, I didn't realize how big it was. I think I only realized once I started playing again how big it was. And I think that was a blessing in itself, just to be blinded in terms of that and just focus on just getting better. but the timing of it was worse, you know. But I've got no regrets, you know. I gave it all my heart and soul, and some things in football work out and others don't, you know. I'm very blessed that, you know, I'm still playing. You know, I've had quite a few years of playing this game, and I still feel good, and for as long as I feel good, I'll keep going and try and help and inspire all those around me.
And what many people can't take away from you is the fact that you've also won three successive league titles with SuperSport between 2007 and 2010, and then another one with the Midwest Wits. I'm going to ask you to pick the best. I know it's tough to choose between your children, but which was the best of the titles?
If I'm honest, you know, the first one, I remember the first one. I mean, the first one was just, I think the first one is always the most special one because it's, everything is new. And I think at the time as well, it was my first season in the PSL. So I don't think I realized the significance of it, to be honest, at the time. But I think it all hit home in the second season in terms of the difficulty. Having played the first and the second, I think, you know, you noticed how teams would play against you and how they'd gone and play against other teams after you. I mean, teams would struggle to get a 1-0 victory, and then the next team that they play against would go hammered 3 or 4. So I think it just showed how much, well, at the time, how much we used to take out of teams and how much effort teams put up against us whenever they played us as obviously the reigning champions. And obviously to carry that pressure for the first, yes, we won it, but the second and then the third year and still finish on top, I think that's the special part of it all. But certainly, I think personally, I'd have to say, I think the third one was the sweetest one, because I think by the time I got to the third one, I think I realized, you know, how special it was, and that it was, well, I was blessed to be part of a truly, truly great generation of players and a great coach.
A bit of a similar question, I guess. But outside of the 2010 World Cup, what would you say is your favorite memory of representing Bafana Bafana?
Very hard. I think, you know, all the games for the national team, there's no game that's the same. I mean, you play in some tough territories, and I've obviously played for different coaches within the national team setup. But there's certainly been games where you felt really good on the pitch, and then the atmosphere has been incredible. So I'd have to say, I mean, easy. I think the first couple of games post World Cup, I mean, they still had that special feeling in terms of the support and the mentality of the players at the time. We had an identity that everyone believed in and bought into, and that was fantastic. I think we're very, very unlucky, you know, with what happens in terms of the qualification for the AFCON. You know, obviously at this point, you know, I mean, we didn't qualify because of a technicality and fine print in the rules, and that was very, very disappointing. But yeah, I think that run was quite special, even post the World Cup.
Now the cliched question that all journalists ask of veteran footballers like yourself: you're 33 years old. How long are you still going to play? And what's in store for you once you do hang up your boots?
Sure. Well, you know, at this point, Mark, yeah, again, very cliche to say, but I think obviously got this from Gavin, where you just worry about that. For as long as I can be fit and available for the next game, you know, I'll keep going. And for as long as, you know, you've got a contract, you'll go. But focusing on just enjoying every single day as it comes, it's been a great journey thus far. I haven't spent much time looking back. I think there's only been moments where I've looked back and appreciated sort of like the progression, which I think is important at times to kind of keep you going, because, you know, I mean, day-to-day football is very, very tough and challenging for the mind and the body and all sorts. But yeah, I think for me now, it's just I've got until July, and then from there we see what's next. But post-football, you know, I would like to remain in the game.
Now, we can't let you go without asking you to explain your Eswatini connection.
Yeah, you know, my mom, I think in my first season, I think it was part of, you know, my debut season, I think that was one of the biggest headlines. And I remember my mom saying, I wish I'd just crossed the border. I wish I'd just crossed the border when I was carrying you. You know, my mom would have grown up in Nelspruit and so on and so forth. But, you know, when I was born, you know, they'd met when my mom was studying at the University of Swaziland at the time. And as it were, you know, that turned out to be my birthplace. But you know, all my life I've been in South Africa, you know, South Africa is all I've known. But I do, I'm well aware of my roots in Eswatini, and I'm very proud of those roots. And, you know, it's a place that I do visit whenever I do get time off. And you know, I do love the people there, very humble people, good people. And yes, I do have family there. So, I mean, that's literally the connection. But yeah, my mom used to joke about it all the time, being like, oh, I wish I just crossed the border. I would have saved you so much trouble to have to explain yourself time and time and time again.
We have with us today the coach of Mozambique, Luís Gonçalves, who we are delighted to say is joining us from Portugal, where the Mambas are preparing this week for two friendly internationals against Guinea-Bissau and Angola. Big thank you for your time, coach. First of all, can I ask you, have you been successful
thank you.
Assembling all of the players that you want for this camp, even with the COVID restrictions?
No. I call... For this camp that began earlier, because as you know, is on the next five is when the data FIFA starts. But we start earlier, and I call 34 players, and we are in Portugal right now training with the players that play in Mozambique, because the clubs in Mozambique they cooperate with us, and I took the players, I can say.
Yeah,
but some players, a few players, they don't come because, for example, Luis Miquel, he plays in Tanzania, he don't come. Reginaldo plays in Kazakhstan, don't come. Clésio in Azerbaijan, because this pandemic, these restrictions, their clubs doesn't allow. And they asked us to don't call them. But right now I have 16 players here with me. We are training, already training. We began yesterday, and on next Monday I think we're gonna have all group together.
And the lack of football in Mozambique, the fact that the league is still not being played. I mean, you know, obviously there are a lot of players now without the
yes.
match fitness. I mean, how big a dilemma is that for you? How much do you worry about that?
It's a question. We are running against the time, I can say. That's why we began early with these players from Mozambique. We are trying to complete this situation with our trainer. So far, so good. But of course, when you're going to play eight against Guinea-Bissau, a friendly match could be different because we have players at Europe and players that not play in Mozambique right now. So. But we have to manage it.
And you made a very good start to your Cup of Nations qualifiers, the 4 points against Cabo Verde and against Rwanda. But obviously
yes.
now Cameroon is a completely different test. Eh? I mean, what is the potential
yes.
to do something against Cameroon?
Powerful team, the country that organized the competition. So we're going to play against Cameroon that they already know that qualified. So besides that, they're going to play, of course, to win. And we're going to play to win also. We know they are favorites. We have a very confident team. We are growing like a team, of course. I'm going to see. The first question is to evaluate the players on next Monday. I need to evaluate players. How are they?
The last time Mozambique were in the finals, obviously, was in 2010 in Angola. I mean, is there a real pressure on you to qualify for this next tournament?
Yes, absolutely. Everybody wants to qualify, and we need to evaluate the situation with reality. So we're going to see. But we are confident. We're going to do our best to be qualified. But it's true, very big pressure to qualify because 10 years, it's too much.
You were appointed in August last year, so that's 14 months in charge, but you've really only had a handful of matches with the team. You beat Mauritius in the World Cup, of course, and then you had that friendly with Kenya, and then the two qualifiers
yes.
in November. I mean, how frustrating has it been just sitting there with this COVID lockdown and with the disruption to world football and just being in limbo almost?
Yes, that's... This is a new situation for everybody all around the world, but we try to do our best. We try to keep connected always with the players, and it's important to know how are they, how are the families, if they are training at home when they aren't at the club. And as you know, different situations, because the players that are in Mozambique, they are different that the players that are in Europe. But always connected, always trying to use the time in a useful way, you know. But it's not easy. It's new for everyone, you know. The most important thing is to be connected always with the players.
Yes, I say you are not the only coach, I suppose, suffering in the same way, yeah?
Yes. I believe so.
Let me ask you a little bit about Mozambique itself. I mean, we know your CV. You worked at Sporting Lisbon. You worked at Benfica in the youth. You worked in Saudi Arabia. You were in charge of the Chinese junior national teams. So you obviously know a lot about youth football. What is the potential of the Mozambican youth? I mean, where are the new Eusebios, the new Mario Colunas, the new Matetus?
Yes, I understand the question, but these are different times, I can say. But we have talent. The Mozambican player, he has talent. But we need to organize better the youth teams, the clubs that work with the youth, and we need to do a plan, and we are working on that. We have a new technical director since December, last December, and we are work together to make a plan to develop the youth, because I believe that's the key. Because we have talent in Mozambique, but we don't have many other things that is needed to develop the players, you know. Infrastructures, fields, we need to improve the coach education, we need to improve in the nutrition and the other things that are very important in the plan that we need to implement to develop the players. But the talent exists, and so we have to bet more on youth, you know.
So do you see the job as a long-term project? I mean, do you get the feeling that the Mozambicans have got patience, that you can have some time to try and develop what you want to develop?
It's a dilemma. Yes. I believe I can stay a few years to help to give my contribution to develop the Mozambican football, but in the other way, everybody wants to go to the AFCON finals, you know. So we'll see, because the new president from Federation, I think he is patient. But we'll see. I'm going to do my best as a coach. But I would like to stay long-term project, not only be responsible for the first team, for the national team, but to give my contribute to develop the football here in Mozambique. Because I have many experience in youth. And I believe I can give a good contribution, you know.
It's been interesting to see some of the Lusophone countries, I think more Guinea-Bissau and Cabo Verde, of course.
Yes.
They look nowadays only at the diaspora of the players, first, second generation, born in Europe, but with parents from Africa. This the latest Angolan squad that they announced for the match against you has some players from born in Germany, some players born in France. With Mozambique, with Mozambique, you only really have Stanley Ratifio. What about other players who have one parent from Mozambique, born in Europe?
Yes.
How much are you looking in the diaspora, in the European leagues, for these players?
Always looking, always searching. And always evaluating, and we are working on that. I believe next November, maybe we can have one or more two players. I don't want to say the names, but we are working on that really. So I believe that's important for our team, because those players, they can give other experiences to the team, you know, and they have different experiences, of course. And I think they could add value to the team. So we are always searching, always looking, always evaluating. But besides that, there's a bureaucratic process that needs time, you know.
Yes.
But we are working on that, yes.
And when you say you're working, I mean, what does that involve? Do you have to go yourself and talk to the young man and try and persuade him that to take an international future with Mozambique?
Yes, that's the first step.
What else do you need to do?
If I detect a player that I believe that could be a good option, that could bring value to the team, the next step, of course, after evaluate the player, after decide that player could be a good option, that's the next step, is to talk with the player and explain what we want from him, and if he agrees, there's a bureaucratic process that the federation and the government they have to do near FIFA and to get the authorization.
Yes,
but that's very important. If a player he doesn't want to represent the national team, we can't do anything, you know.
Last question I want to ask you, Coach, before I let you go, is maybe taking you a little bit into the future. The World Cup qualifiers have been moved now from November to June. Cameroon again, then the Ivory Coast.
Yes.
And your neighbors, Malawi.
Yes.
I mean, were you given a horror draw?
Yeah. That's a very difficult group, indeed. But we're going to play match by match, I can say. We're going to do our best. And I used to say, I have the right to dream. So we're going to do our best match by match. But it's a very difficult group. If we win the group, that's a huge step for Mozambique. After that, if that happens, we have the playoffs. So, but match after match, that's the philosophy, and we're gonna do our best.
That was certainly an interesting chat with Mozambique coach Luis Gonzalez about their matches coming up in what is a bumper set of international fixtures in the coming days, with Mozambique and Angola in Portugal, of course, and Comores, who are in Tunisia, playing some matches there. Mark, we start off this evening with Kenya against Zambia, another test for Micho Shredojevic after his game against Malawi on Wednesday.
Yes, it's heartening to see that so many of the CASAFA countries have taken up the opportunity of this window to play some friendly matches. As you know, the competitive start for Africa is only next month, so teams were free to decide whether to play or not in this 10-day period. And you know, there's quite a level of commitment when you send a full squad to Portugal, as Mozambique and Angola have done, or in the case of the Comores, when you send a squad to Tunisia, and in fact Madagascar as well, because they are playing in Luxembourg and also in Morocco in the next couple of days. But Zambia too, traveling to Nairobi, then they're coming down to South Africa. They're obviously mixing it up a little bit with a Chan squad, looking ahead to the Cameroon tournament in January, and also then looking ahead to vital, vital games for them against Botswana next month in the Cup of Nations qualifiers. Remember, they haven't got any points yet.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, that's the problem for coaches, is you don't want to go into those Nations Cup qualifiers completely undercooked. And these teams are in, for many of them, an unprecedented situation where they haven't played games since last November. So, you know, these matches are crucial. You know, South Africa up against Zambia on Sunday, another game for Zambia. That'll be three games in 6 days for them, crisscrossing across the continent. That's huge for Coach Malefi Ntseki, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And you know, there's a lot of pressure on him as a new coach too, and he's missed out on lots of opportunity over the last year, given that we've all been locked down with this COVID crisis. I think it's perhaps a little easier for him in the sense that the league in South Africa was completed, and there has been some game time for the players, and that the league will start again next week, and obviously teams are in pre-season training. There are many other leagues like Mozambique and Angola, for example, Zimbabwe, where they haven't got back underway, and players have not had a competitive football match since March. And that's obviously a huge factor when you look ahead to the games next month. You know, and Luis Gonzalez said that as much in the interview earlier, was about how undercooked almost the players will be, and how unsure he is as a coach what he's going to get from them physically when they play this week, and indeed when they play next month.
Another interesting one on Sunday will be Malawi against Zimbabwe, after, of course, Malawi travelled to Zambia on Wednesday, taking a pretty strong squad with guys like Gaborino Mahanga, the Orlando Pirates striker. Zimbabwe, there has been some talk that that game would not go ahead, as they have not yet received government approval for it to be played. But if it is played, it's a fascinating clash.
Absolutely. I mean, we know the potential of Zimbabwe. We saw what they did against Zambia in last November in the Cup of Nations. We've seen how powerful their squad is. Obviously, travel is somewhat restricted, particularly for the international players. So the squad that they'll have is nowhere near as strong as it potentially will be next month when they resume the Cup of Nations qualifiers. And of course, they can take another big step towards qualifying for Cameroon. But then it's a good chance for the new coach as well to have a look at some of the locally based players. I know he's been back in Harare for the last couple of weeks now after the lockdown to prepare for these games.
And, you know, we were talking about teams having to have game time, and I suppose that's no better exemplified when the Comores take on a Tunisia under 20 team on Sunday as well. It's just about getting minutes under the belt, isn't it?
Yeah, there's been a little bit of criticism from the Comorian community, if you look on social media, about that game. They do see it as a little bit of an insult in a way, A, and B, perhaps, you know, physically not the kind of test that the Comores would require. Maybe it would be better for them to go and play a French club, for example, as a few correspondents on social media pointed out. But, I mean, they're in Tunis in a camp, and I think that's the most important thing. They're all there already. The game against Libya is a full international. The game against the under-20s is an opportunity to bring in three or four of the new faces that they've got in the squad as well, try and integrate them in. So I think there's no pressure as well in terms of results. So I think the coach will be pretty happy with that outcome, even if some of the Comorians feel a little bit insulted by the fact that Tunisia are not playing the national team against them. They're going to play Nigeria instead, but that they're sending the under-20s.
Yeah, and then just two games after that. On Monday, we've got Madagascar against Burkina Faso, which is taking place in Morocco. And on Tuesday, then Mozambique take on Angola in a all-Portuguese clash there, I guess you could say, taking place in Portugal.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fascinating contest, always is, between those two countries. And they've got, you know, strong squads, both of them, for the camp in Portugal. And they're Angola in particular are a team perhaps in a little bit of a mini crisis, having done very poorly in the Cup of Nations qualifiers last November when they last played. You remember they lost at home to the Gambia, which is probably one of the worst home results that Angola have ever had. So, you know, the opportunity again to have everybody together. I think there's a little bit of a transition too in the Angolan side. There's a lot of new faces, a good opportunity for them against decent opposition, because they, you know, Guinea-Bissau is their first opponent, and then Mozambique. Neither of those countries will want to lose what is effectively a little bit of a derby match. It's sure to be a fascinating few days of action as our national teams work through the rust to fine-tune themselves for the resumption of the Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers next month.
Yes, and what a relief it is to see international football back on the African stage. Remember, you can also listen to more of our podcasts on Sokoloduma Radio, Kasafa.tv, Spotify, and iTunes. And you can also get the latest news via our website at www.kasafa.com and on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok.
Goodbye, and we look forward to your company in a fortnight's time.